Hi, welcome to Get Well Sooner, a podcast that takes a skeptical look at the things we do to get well. My name's Sarah, and today I'm continuing my chat with regular guest Paul about Mormonism and restrictions in religion. We are talking a little bit about alcohol, kind of goes all over the place, but I just wanted to say, if you have experience with like restriction and alcohol, any like AA experience or anything like that that you want to share, let me know. I have heard some suspicious sort of things about how AA is a religious organization and that they don't have a lot of science behind their claims. So if you can confirm or deny that, even just from a personal experience, I would love to hear from you. We'll chat about it more after this conversation. But again, thanks, Paul, for chatting with me, our Mormon correspondent. Here we go. Oh, yeah. So talking about alcohol, you also like some of the only times that I drink is like when I go to breweries with you, because it's so.
I'm sorry, you're welcome.
No, no, I don't know. It doesn't mean anything other than like I know that like having too much alcohol makes me just kind of sad, but I think people know that about like alcohol. I think people have known that alcohol makes some people sad for a very long time, you know, or like you said, that around that, the time that those words were being written, there's a temperance, right? There was a temperance movement.
I mean, that's been something in America, I feel like, for their entire history.
Right.
I mean,
this is like Puritans.
Mormons are still, you know, 100 years before, maybe not quite, but before like the Prohibition era of the 1900s.
Right.
But there was still, you know, question as to how much, and depending on what religion you were, you know, how this works and everything. But yeah, it is funny. If you go into the actual stuff Joseph Smith wrote down, it's like drinks of barley are for the belly. So like beer should be totally okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely drank wine with their sacrament. And Joseph Smith was drinking wine the night he was killed in prison. He was in a prison and a mob came and murdered him. But he was drinking wine that night because I think he knew what was coming. He was...
Mm. Like, might as well.
Anyway, but yeah, no, they drank wine back in that era of the church. Like, it was more like they were trying to encourage people to drink less liquor because there probably was a lot of issues with like heavy drinking of whiskey and I'm guessing abuse within relationships and just like amongst friends, you know, drinking too much when you're out in the early 1800s in the middle of nowhere without a lot to do, I imagine could lead to some trouble.
Yeah, I know that, like, I was just talking about how, you know, the temperance movement was, really pushed by a lot of women, but it was because their husbands were abusing them after they were drunk, and they were like, well, the problem is alcohol, so let's take that away. And that's not, turns out that's not the main problem.
you know what inspired this health rule or revelation from Joseph Smith? His wife and some other women were complaining about certain aspects of behavior and saying it was ungodly for some of the men to be spitting this gross chewing tobacco all over some of the meeting halls and drinking alcohol and stuff. And Joseph was like, oh yeah, that I'll go to God and we'll see what he says about it. And this was as a result of that. But even at the time, it wasn't enforced as dramatically as it is now, where like it's very much like if you get caught drinking your iced tea, they might take away your card. Mind you, I've known church leaders of my own in the past, the further out from cities and stuff, I found like, yeah, there was total church leaders that would like be drinking an iced tea in front of everybody at like their house at a church gathering. And it's just like, again, the rules mean different things depending on who your leaders are and who's enforcing what. And
yeah,
but yeah, iced tea also against the rules, just in case that wasn't clear.
Yes, right.
Because it's hot. Just tea, but cold.
Right, and so iced coffee means, is
hot
fine.
Drinks means iced tea, well, clearly. It's just
yes.
logical. But yeah, the alcohol one. I do remember my first drink of alcohol was not a great experience. Someone had gifted me. Not because anything bad happened. Someone had gifted me a bottle of very cheap red wine. And I had like stuck it in the cupboard and was like, you know what? I've been out for... This was probably, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years after I'd left Mormonism. And I'd gone far enough where I was like, I'm not going back. I question the motivations. If I drink, but I'm not getting like blackout drunk or whatever, I think that's fine and healthy. And this is red wine, which of all the drinks is probably the healthiest, right?
Yeah.
I poured myself a little glass and took a sip and it was horrible. It was
just so like gross.
Gross vinegar.
Ugh.
That being said, you know, I've had some since that I'm a big fan of red wine now, but like whatever this was, it was just someone trying to be nice. I probably should have been making like stew with it or something. But that was my memory where I was like, I don't like drinking, but I tried some other things and finally found a balance. And now, yeah, like I'll go to a brewery, but like I'm not, it's funny, as much of a beer nerd as I am, and I'll talk about like cool local craft beer and stuff. Or even whiskey at times, like I'm trying to learn more about it. I don't drink more than like a couple of drinks. If I go out and drink, it's like socially, I'll have a flight of weird beer at a craft brewery. Well, maybe I'll have one with dinner at home one night where I'm just like, oh, I'd like to try this or whatever. Like, that's about it.
Like, you, honestly, like, I mean, there's a lot of things that suck about not being able to drink when you're young. Like, you know, and like when you're that, especially when you're in your 20s, you should be able to make your own decisions and stuff. But also, like, God, as a sober person watching the rest of us, like, I'm sure you were like, well, I don't really want to do that. You know,
it was kind of funny because I was, you know, I knew people that would like avoid going to pubs or bars with their friends or going to parties where there was drinking. I don't think I ever really shied away from that. Even in high school, I remember going to parties, and I was someone who was dedicated to my religion.
Yeah.
I honestly never tried a drink of alcohol until that little glass of red wine at 32 or whatever I was, 31. I didn't have a problem with it. I'd go and I'd see some people doing stupid stuff and I kind of laugh about it, but be like, or, you know, someone's throwing up in the back. Like, why would I want to do any of this? And like, it smells kind of gross. Like, you know, I've learned since that it's more a matter of like, you know, refined palates, and you're pushing, you know, whether it's the bitter or the sour or whatever flavors, and it matches well with your meal. And, you know,
and it is relaxing. Like, unfortunately, like it is, like, I think that for me, I mean, it became a problem for me because I was so anxious, and it does kind of help with that. I could see
that might have been a problem for me at a younger age, where I felt like when I got into it, even then, I was being very cautious because of my anxieties relating to what if. But one or two beers, as someone who is a bit anxious, having like a drink is good for someone who has been socially anxious at times in my life, where I'm not getting drunk, but even just the slightest bit of like release, putting me at ease,
it's
like
nice.
A relaxant of sorts. So for me, it's been valuable, but again, it's like depending on your own life. Like, I hold no ill will to someone who has stopped drinking or has never had a drink. You don't need it. But
no.
For some people, I think it can be healthy and good.
And then, like, you know, I think that part of the problem with, because you're like, you were such a good, you're a good Mormon, and you were like following all the rules. And like, there is also rules for like ages and like age ranges. And so I think that in North America and our culture around alcohol is pretty weird because like children obviously are not allowed to have alcohol, and then like you're not allowed to have alcohol until in a certain age in certain provinces, and then it's different in other provinces, and then in the States it's like 21. Like by the time I was 21, I was like, oh, my party days are over, you know. They weren't, but I was like, oh wow, I can't imagine having to wait until you're 21.
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of American 21 year olds who feel the same way.
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely
feel like that law is obeyed. As far there were it was funny going to shows at the Biltmore, I remember, and like meeting American kids who drove up. Remember, like, I think I was with you at a Lonely Forest show, and they're from Anacortes, and there was a bunch of kids who came up with them, and they were all getting plastered because they were legally allowed to get beer at a venue, and to them it was a big deal as a bunch of 20-year-olds or whatever, whereas, like, we were kind of looking at them like, what is wrong with these children?
Yeah! I mean, I remember, like, and so I just think that restriction of any kind is not good. Pretty much, because a lot of people will start obsessing about things when you restrict them.
There are a lot of people who come out of Mormonism and start drinking and do it really heavily. They do the opposite of me. They don't try to ease in. They try to dive into the deep end, and it can be dangerous.
Yeah. And so I think it's like a lot of, like, especially if you're young and you have anxiety or depression or anything, and then you are suddenly allowed to drink, or you figure out how to get alcohol. I definitely started drinking before it was legal, but because we had those.
It wasn't me, despite
it
being
was
the
not
older
you
friend in the group. I was not. What did they call it? Booting or something.
But yeah, overdoing it on the alcohol was my first instinct, and then giving up alcohol was also like, okay, well, I hope this fixes me now. You know, and it neither of those things are true. Like drinking yourself to oblivion is not going to fix you, but obviously, but giving up alcohol altogether is not going to fix you. It will make some things better, but I don't know. I don't know this scientifically, but from what I've read, it seems like restriction of anything has a very high fail rate. Like quitting things cold turkey or not letting people do stuff 100% of the time, those people think about those things more. I think that whether it's for religious reasons or for cultural reasons, restriction of anything is just gonna make you go wild.
Well, and I think for a lot of people, and again, it's not everybody, but lots of people have challenges of varying levels on following through on those absolutes. Mm-hmm. It's funny, as you're talking about these sort of alcohol problems, which is definitely something within the LDS church, there's programs. There was a joke on The Office when Michaels tries to do a intervention with Meredith for her drinking. And he starts out reading these things, and the third point or something was something along the lines of, have you ever questioned the teachings of the Latter-day Saints religion while under the influence of alcohol? And everyone turns to him like, where did you get this? He goes, online or whatever.
Yeah.
And the joke was, he stole it from like the LDS services, Mormon sort of program for getting people. They don't like being called Mormons anymore. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you did. Sorry.
But to me, as a cultural Mormon, I still hold to the word and don't think it's a dirty word like some of them do. Anyway, but what I'm getting at is they have other programs beyond alcohol. So when it comes to like sexual sins, and one of the most common ones there that I've listened to a lot of podcasts where people open up about participating in these programs. I've talked to people I know who have at least done a little bit of this, but it's the pornography and masturbation.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if anyone looks at pornography like ever, or masturbates ever, like even like once a month, once every 3 months, they are an addict and they need treatment.
Yeah.
And they have programs similar to the 12-step sort of AA program to get you to stop looking at it. But in a lot of these interviews, what you realize is like these are just like normal people with normal urges. And like the second they look at it, even if they've gone 6 months without looking at Pornhub or whatever it is, they look at it once and their whole self-value and strength and everything crashes. And it's like the whole world is going wrong. Whereas like if somebody did have an issue where like, okay, maybe I should tone this down, or maybe it's impacting my life in a certain way, that would be another thing altogether. You probably work with a therapist or something and go, okay, well, I feel like I'm doing this for the wrong reasons. Whereas if it's just cold turkey, it's not about the individual. It's about your allegiance, your dedication, and making you feel like shit so that you are still indebted to that organization. I mean, I don't think that's the motivator if you ask the church leader, but I bet if they described it, it wouldn't be that far off. It would just be framed in a nicer way. But like, it's all about putting Christ and the church and whatever the leadership teachings ahead of self in the
And when
end.
you take away people's coping mechanisms without really like
Yeah.
giving people other things to do instead, and like to really like just being like, okay, now your new thing is God or whatever,
Yeah.
like it's just not as effective. And I realize, you know, another church group that has programs for getting off of alcohol is Scientology. And they try not to put their name on it. Like they're like, this is a separate thing. But so many, like a lot of people would go into this situation where they do horrible things to those people. Like they go and they put them on these crazy vitamin diets and like put them in saunas for really long periods of time. It's really easy. What I'm saying is really easy to get people who are struggling and take away their thing and replace it with your thing that you're selling or whatever. And whether that's religion or another substance or whatever, when it really should be about like, yeah, what's the underlying problem? Let's look into it. The thing I think I would probably be the most addicted to today would be video games. I was talking about it with my therapist, and she's like, right now, whatever. Just you're withdrawing off of benzos, whatever. Doesn't matter. If later, once you've withdrawn off of benzos, you feel like you're playing too many video games, we will look at, you know, what you're getting out of it and w if you could get it somewhere else, or you know, like that kind of thing. Or like, do we need to judge this, or are you it, or is it normal, or is it fine? And we just have an idea that like playing video games is lazy and therefore I shouldn't do it. And you know, and like as I play video games, I feel bad about myself, but also it's a very immersive experience. It's very relaxing for me. It's a similar thing where like in certain So I hope this is a total tangent, but I hope that in the future, like video games will be seen like novels, because people used to speak about people reading novels the same way that people speak about people playing video games now. So I hope I'll be like, oh yes, I played all of the classics back when they came out. Like, you know, like I was a real video game connoisseur. No one understood. You know, it's like back then they thought we were all lazy, but now it's like we realize what artistic masterpieces this are. That's my hope.
I've fallen out of sort of the gaming thing in more recent years, but some of my fond memories from being a kid were some of the really like the good like stories told in role-playing games. Like I loved Chrono Trigger and Earthbound, and they were these like again like reading a novel, and there was a bit of a choose your own adventure and participation. And anyway, I'm just saying, yeah, a lot of it should be dealt with, any of these things. What is it doing for you? What may it be impacting in your life otherwise? What are the motivations? Is there like it's more dealing with what's behind the actions, whereas when you're dealing with the actions themselves, and not a doctor, I'm not a
Not a
therapist, I'm just
doctor,
getting into wellness, mindfulness more in recent years myself, but it seems like yeah, dealing with the actions oftentimes is not valuable and if you're staying at that level of depth, when you're introspecting, it can get you into trouble because you get mad at yourself, but you don't
Yes.
understand the motivations and the drives behind those things.
Yeah.
You're just reacting to what society or the people around you think of it. So,
Yeah.
yeah, if it's drinking or pornography or whatever within Mormonism and you have a partner, a lot of times they'll judge you and think that like you don't get enough out of them, their relationship, which maybe that might be part of it, but you
Yeah,
should
but
explore that. It shouldn't be like
yeah.
an instant like I'm bad and they're even worse for not getting enough out of our relationship or whatever. It should be like, oh, why would they want to do that? Oh, you know, it's the same as like all sorts of, you know, people not wanting to enjoy the pleasure of sex or whatever is another conversation within religion, I feel like, where
Yeah.
it's not a judgment on you if somebody brings tools or toys to the table. You know,
Yes.
it's one of these like, what's the motivation? What's the need? What's the drive here? Let's talk
Yeah.
about that. Let's not worry about the like surface level stuff.
Yeah, and so I think so my Gabby's freedom sessions that she did, which we are going to do a whole episode on, is when she went to AA for sinners, basically. And there all of the
I want to
guys
hear
who
about it.
all the guys who participated, because I had to go to the graduation of not her, but a weird random other group. All the guys were there for porn addiction. And
Wait,
I
I'm
was just
sure.
like,
Yeah.
and also a lot of the women were like, before I took this program, like I was like Samantha from Sex and the City. You can't imagine how many guys I slept with. Like, and just I just remember being like, Samantha's cool. Like, what are you talking about? Like, it doesn't matter. That's not bad. That's not like a reason to like be up here crying about how horrible you were. Like,
But
yeah.
if an organization or people you respect or revere have been telling you it's a reason to be shamed, that's what it is. Like that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, it can't just be these super superficial sort of what are you doing with your life? It should really be like, what are you doing with your, but why are you doing these things with your life? Are they serving you? And how, like, religion too often doesn't dig into that, or if it does, it's a very specific, this is what you should be doing. It's not about what works for you. It's about what we're telling you will work for you, in our opinion.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And like there's so many similarities between different religions. As many people have noted, but also between all of these movements that are kind of like some of the more modern day religions, I guess, where people have lots of magical thinking, and then there is a lot of a lot of restriction in many different ways. And willpower and motivation. I mean, that's also just like being a woman because you need to exercise and eat healthy. And like that's also being a human, but especially being a woman from the time you were very young. Willpower, like you see ads. I remember seeing an ad where like this lady's like, "Where's willpower?" And then I feel like it's probably like Will Arnett or someone. I don't know. He's like some super man shows up and he's like, "Hey, it's me." And she's like, "Where are you? I'm trying to diet." And then he like gives her a Special K cereal bar. And I just remember like that just stuck in my head forever. Like willpower. Like that's a thing that you need to have. And some people can't find it. And what does that mean? And I don't have it. I don't have willpower because I had binge eating disorder, so really don't have willpower. So that it's a fake thing. It's or it's like a it's actually like a giant mess of things that we call one word. You know, I don't know. I'm just
It's
going
getting
off.
late. It's getting late. Don't worry. Words leave
Okay.
us sometimes, but
Yes. You're right. I should. Yes. Okay. We did it.
have you
We.
got something there? Is that an episode?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Well, I feel
We
like you when you chat when you talk. It's very interesting, and I could listen to it forever. So I think other people agree. And Greg will probably edit out some of the things I say. I don't know. We'll see.
Do we need some kind of conclusion or
I will do a wrap up, but I mean, we could also do one wrap up.
Is there any point? Is there any extra question that you want to like drive home? That sounded weird. But just
drinks.
I mean, drinks. It's just kind of an interesting concept when you're talking about some of these organizations that ask mm-hmm. so much of people. And I don't know. It does come down to control in many mm-hmm. ways. And it's amazing what these small things, it seems like very little in the eyes of many people, you know, whether you drink coffee or not really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, you stack enough of those up and yeah, it's something that's on your mind all the time. Yes. Something to keep track of. And I'm sure it gets even more, you know, the higher demand when you're getting into proper cults, whether or not you want to define mm-hmm. Latter-day Saints as a proper cult. Some folks do, I'm sure. But
yeah,
depends. I'm sure there's a lot of rules around consumption or just, you know, habits like that. And we dipped into some other directions, I guess, as well. But
it's that's the vibe. It's like, it's just controlling.
If you can get someone to give up their cup of coffee in the morning, you know, it's shocking how quickly that can build up to committing 10% to their earnings for the rest of their life, or refusing their parents' entry at their wedding, or, you know, it's amazing. But it is by small and simple things that, like church, we used to talk about, like Satan deceives people with a flaxen cord. And just little by little, and mm-hmm. before you know it, you know, you could wrap someone in one or two rounds of dental floss and they can break free real easy. I feel like this was a lesson in primary
right.
classes mm-hmm. in Sunday school. But if you take the whole spool of dental floss, you might be able to keep that person tied up. But it's funny that like the biggest examples of those things I think I saw were the religious teachings, where they get you with the little things. And then when you grow up and it's, okay, well, do you want to go for 2 years and put your well-being at risk and sacrifice time that you could be in university or discovering yourself with working for us for free or paying to work for us?
Right.
You're going to do it. You're going to get married in that temple. You're going to dedicate your life and your kids' lives to this organization. And, you know, if you go to the temple, you commit all of your money and time to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Like, it starts with the small and simple things like a cup of coffee or whatever.
It's, and there's kind of a sunk cost fallacy there too, where you're like, oh, well, I have already given up I think millions of me. Cups of coffee. So
that was me in my 20s. A lot of it where I was discovering issues, and you know, that was the last episode though, I guess, about the shelf, where I was just like, I'm in this. It's not that bad, even if it's not true.
Yeah. But then you have, but then it's like starting to drink delicious drinks at 31. You have many, many years of drinking delicious drinks ahead of you. And that's so great. Hopefully that's exciting.
I appreciate them that much more now.
I appreciate them more when I drink them with you, I think, because I'm like, this is special. I remember you got when you started drinking coffee, and you got like an amazing, just a crazy amazing drink. It was like alcohol and coffee together with like whipped cream and like this amazing thing. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, I was like, this is like, I would never get that because I'd be like waiting for like a celebration or something. But you were just like trying everything and it was so fun. And I was like, I want one too. But also at the time I was like, oh, I can't have caffeine. But
we'll go for a saucy coffee sometime soon. I don't get them that often anymore. But if you go for brunch, treat yourself.
It was brunch. It was just like, wow, like this is, I remember you starting to do all these things and you were just like really appreciating like the, you know, like you really like breweries and all this stuff. I'm like, that's so cool. And I like it made me a little bit more interested in that stuff again.
after really shredding it out, because I thought it was not good for me, and you know, whether or not that's true, whatever.
There was definitely probably a somewhat childlike innocence to my exploring.
I loved it.
Was just trying to like really savor the first few sips of whatever.
I loved it.
Get every little note and ask people what I should be looking for. Like, I'm sure it was a strange for someone in their early 30s to be asking these questions.
It was so lovely.
Yeah, it was.
It was so fun to watch.
It was an experience, and it still is. I'm still trying to be, you know, appreciative of that even more so now, and just
right.
So you have some of mindfulness. You're supposed to enjoy every bite of that pastry, or you know, even if it's just a bowl of porridge or whatever. Try to stop and just. You're not just eating to live. You're appreciating every moment. So I'm not perfect at that by any means.
No.
But I'd love to, you know, try to do that as often as I can.
That's really good advice. Nice. Well, thank you again for hanging out with me and chatting. Regular guest, Paul, over here.
We can just talk, you know, you can call me whenever.
Yes. Awesome. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And yeah, again, if you have any information about any sort of restrictive diet or alcohol restriction practices that work or don't work, that's the kind of stuff I want to know about, because getting well often... we try and cut things out of our lives, sometimes forever, sometimes for a small amount of time. And I'm just really curious as to how that goes for people. Restriction hasn't worked very well for me in the past. So I'm just really curious. And I definitely want to hear from you, even if you don't know anything about that, but you have other things to say, please just message me at sarah.jickling on Instagram or at getwellsoonerpod. Share your stories, share any weird advertisements that you get or anything you see that's advertising itself as something that will make you well. I would love to see what the internet thinks you should buy for your own wellness. So send that to Get Well Sooner on Instagram, or you can send it to me at sarah.jickling@gmail.com. And finally, I'm working on creating like a Patreon style thing that is, I think it's called Coffee though. And I'm just like letting people know about it. And if you have any ideas for, you know, different ranks or anything, ranks, is that what it's called? Different levels. let me know. I already know that I want to create an option where I can turn listeners into Sims and make Sims households for them. So if that sounds interesting, let me know if you want one of those, or if you have any other ideas of cool bonus things I could do that I could put behind like a paywall, just like a really small paywall, like more like a pay fence. It's because my therapist told me to do it. That's why. Anyways, I will hear from you. Hopefully I might see you. Depends on who you are. Anyways, Sarah out.
Now I am a cautionary tale. I need to be under supervision.